as I wait. Heart of
Hello,
God.
New Life, and welcome to the Growth Group podcast, where we believe that spiritual growth happens better in circles than it does in rows. My name is David Haken, and I'm joined by Jonathan Markham, the pastor of New Life Christian Fellowship here in Pacifica, California, and we record these podcasts to help you go deeper with Sunday's teaching, both in your small group and in your individual walk with the Lord. This week, we are taking, we're not taking a break. We're taking a pause from the content of our Saturate series. Saturate series is 4 weeks, or eight weeks long, and we've just finished our fourth week, talking about the identity, our identity as servants, just as Christ was a servant. And as we found ourselves in the middle of this series, we thought that this would be a good week to kind of recap a little bit, at least with our growth group questions, recap what we've learned.
Especially since you shared with us on Sunday plans for your future ministry. And so it was a great opportunity, I think, for us. Sometimes it's good to just take time to sort of say, okay, so where are we? What have we thought about so far?
Yeah. And a good thing that you might try out in your growth groups this week, just as we have heard a number of testimonies so far this series, maybe you can share some of your testimonies. Maybe pick one person from your group, have them share for a few minutes this week, and maybe another person from your group next week. Always a good thing, isn't it?
I don't think I can emphasize enough, and I know I've probably said it in almost every one of the sermons so far, how important it is for us to be comfortable telling our stories. Because it's one of the most, if not the most, it's one of the most powerful evangelistic tools that there is.
Right.
Is because when you say, Jesus has changed my life, and you say it to a person who probably knows you enough to know that may have noticed the change, or even if they haven't noticed the change, they know the way you behave. And very often our stories begin in places when we don't behave as well as we should have done.
Right. And they highlight the change that Jesus has made in our lives.
Right. And nobody can turn around and say, no, it hasn't. Unless, of course, we tell a story that isn't the truth. But nobody can say, when you say Jesus has changed me like this, nobody can turn around and say, no, he hasn't. And so it's one of the reasons why, the first stage of evangelism is normally to get to know and trust a Christian.
Right.
So that when you know and trust somebody,
especially in our modern age,
when you know and trust somebody and they tell you their story, you are predisposed to believe what they tell you because you have a relationship with them, you know what sort of person they are, and you've no reason to distrust them. So practicing, but it's not easy. I mean, we've encouraged people when we went on our mission, we're preparing for a missions trip, certainly during Starting Point, we encourage people to write their story first, to write it so that you've thought it through, and you know that you can do that.
We got a powerful example of the effectiveness of writing out a spoken word when Mitch spoke before the men at the Super Bowl breakfast.
Right.
He did a wonderful job, and he definitely carefully crafted that message. And a carefully crafted message is very effective. It can help you clear and kind of isolate your own thoughts.
Right.
But you don't have to start from the very beginning of your story every time that you share. If you can highlight a small little piece, incident...
And I mean, hopefully, we've all got stories of what God has done in our lives over the past month.
Right.
Not just
Maggie's faithfulness journal was a great example during the 21 days. Well, let's get into our first question.
Yeah.
Our first question attempts to highlight the content from the first week of our Saturate series. It reads like this: it's always good to pause and reflect on the journey that's taken you to the present moment. At this midpoint of our series called Saturate, we're doing just that. What is the big idea behind Saturate? How does it relate to the goal of having every man, woman, and child in every place having a daily encounter with Jesus? Discuss our three-part salvation learned about in week one as well. We have been, we are being, and we will be saved.
Right. This is, I mean, again, this is this is the place where we originally started talking about our story. And there's the thing that we've looked at almost every time, where it said, you know, if you Jesus' saturation won't happen through you until it's happened to you.
Yeah.
And so the beginning of our saturation journey is to recognize what Jesus has done for us, and what Jesus is doing for us,
right,
and what He promised that He will do for us.
He has saturated us. He is saturating us, and He will saturate.
Yes, exactly. So it's so important to really. I read somewhere, I can't remember where, but I read somewhere that we should preach the gospel to ourselves,
yes,
every day.
That's a really, really good word.
And when I first read that, I thought, oh, that's a bit weird. But
I'm already saved. I don't need the gospel.
Right. But really, I need reminding of the reality of the gospel probably more than once a day.
Right. We're so forgetful.
Right. And it doesn't mean that Jesus, that my salvation slips away and comes back.
Certainly
but
not.
I need to be reminded of what Jesus has done for me. And, if somebody paid off your mortgage for you, you know, if you had a big mortgage, somebody paid off your mortgage for you, every time you looked at them, you would be reminded of what they'd done for
right.
you. And
be
that
with
would be
Jesus,
a,
isn't
yeah,
that right?
That would be a good reminder. So when we are with Jesus, when we spend time with Jesus, when we spend time alone with Him, then we remember that we remember the gospel and
right.
what He's done for us.
Yeah, because it's so easy to slip into a slavery to the mortgage again, even
right.
though the mortgage has already been
right.
paid. Yeah, that's great. And just one other helpful tip for your conversation around this first question is to remember that little line that we learned, that we have been saved from the penalty of sin, we are being saved from the power of sin, and we will be saved from the
presence of sin.
Yeah, so that's a good way to get your discussion started. Our second question relates to week two. We learned about the impact of missional communities in week two. How does being vulnerable in a life-on-life relationship and learning from one another's strengths in a community of the church help you fill everything everywhere with Jesus?
Yeah, I mean, when you start saying, how do we saturate the world with, how do we saturate Pacifica with Jesus? We need to be specific and look at the different contexts in which we find ourselves. We find ourselves now. Not everybody is fortunate enough to have relationships that you really, where you can be thoroughly vulnerable. People who love you,
yeah.
Know the worst about you and love you just the same.
Right.
People,
places where individual saturation is really it flourishes.
Right. And you can really say the things when you're feeling terrible. You don't have to worry, oh, will they tell somebody else? Will they think I'm bad? Will they? You just don't think of those things because you know the relationship of your two lives is
right.
such.
They're a source of strength and a source of encouragement, not a source of judgment.
Right. But they won't be. They're not afraid to challenge you.
Yeah.
But then you know a community of people that. Maybe not be quite that close, but together they challenge one another to deepen and strengthen their relationships with one another and their effectiveness, but also relationships outside, which where you drift from community to missional, where you're making relationships with people outside, not because they're a project, not because they're, you know, that you're targeting them, but simply because you want to be able to share all of the wonders of the gospel, all of the ways in which Jesus has and is and will change you. Mm. You want to share them with other people.
Mm.
And so you need to build those trusting relationships.
Right. And doing so oftentimes requires certain giftings which are present in this larger community. Some are better at this
right.
element of the Christian faith and practice, evangelism, say, and others maybe have their noses in the book of the Bible a little bit more than you and can help you in that way. So we need to lean on each other.
Right. We need to we all can contribute different things.
Our third week, the third of Saturate's 8 weeks are devoted to, three of Saturate's 8 weeks are devoted to our new identity. This is our third question, as a follower of Jesus. Vanderstelt strongly emphasizes in these weeks that our identity informs everything we do. What does he mean by that? Have you found this to be the case in your life? How has our adoption into God's family, an especially powerful identity-forming event, remember Julie's testimony?
Yes, it's so easy for us to unwittingly allow other people to define us. And other people to give us our identity. I mean, the most classic example, of course, is when you meet somebody, you say, the first thing you do is to ask their name, but secondly, you say, well, what do you do?
What have you accomplished?
You're defined by the job you do, all of those sorts of things. But of course, we could lose our jobs tomorrow. And then, do we lose our identity?
Right.
No.
Hello, my name is David. I'm unemployed.
Right. Yes. And that's going to do you a lot of good. But on the other hand, when you think about it, if I meet you and I say, "Hi, David. Who are you?" That almost it almost sounds like an insult. It
stops people in their tracks.
But really, we need to. But our identity defines us, because if you say you're a, when I'm in the locker room in the gym and somebody says, "What do you do?" and I say I'm a pastor, they immediately say think certain things about
right,
me.
Right, it instantly puts filters in front of their eyes right. And over the mouth.
And it may be completely different. It may that one person may have a completely different certain filters than the other, but they begin to define me by what I said I do. Rather than, by who I am. And so it's so important, if we're going to be followers of Jesus, that we understand our identity as his followers.
Right. So part of that situation that you sketched out is unavoidable.
Right.
I mean, people are going to ask you what you do. You can change the way that you perceive yourself.
Right.
So that I don't perceive myself as a... whatever profession I do, although of course God has called me to that profession,
right.
And he's called me to work as hard as I can and to serve people as best as I can through that job. So I wouldn't want to dismiss the importance of our work.
No, but you can, but you can use your work to as a door to open to tell people who you actually are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a pastor, but I'm also a follower of Jesus.
Right, right.
And my faith is my own. It's not something which I have because of my job. All of those sorts of things which can become apparent in your conversation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been adopted into the family of God.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, our fourth question deals with the second element of our identity, as Vanderstelt identifies, the fact that we're a servant. In week 4, we learned that as King Jesus came not to be served, but to serve, so we too, as his followers, are called to the upside down, the last shall be first, servant identity. Amy Carmichael, missionary to India in the early 1900s, embraced her servant identity. Above the desk in her room, she had the words from Mark 9:35 etched in wood, servant of all. How would your day-to-day life change if you entered every situation with the mentality, I am a servant of all?
Yeah, I mean, that says it all, that you look at the way you live and you think, how much thought do I actually give to how I can serve you? Mm-hmm. I mean, when you walked into my office this afternoon, did I think, well, I wonder how I'll be able to serve David today?
But that is the absolute implication of those words in Mark 9.
Absolutely.
You are to be a servant of everyone.
Absolutely. It's the absolute implication. It's the what Jesus says when he said, I didn't come to be served, but to serve.
Yeah.
He said, that's my purpose. That's what the Father's told me to do.
Right.
And therefore, that's what the Father's told us to do.
And it wasn't an empty, you know, pithy statement for him. He got out the towel and he washed his disciples' feet.
Washed his disciples' feet. Yeah. He serves his disciples. He fed the 5,000.
Right, right.
Served them food.
He was their waiter.
Right. So, you know,
there
are so many, when we begin to think through how can we serve people, mm-hmm. it's so important.
Right. Yeah, that little story about Amy Carmichael. So, it's so simple and so beautiful and profound. I read it in her biography, a biography written by Elizabeth Elliot when I was in college. Mm-hmm. And I just made a little mental note of that. Not that I've really fulfilled that very well or stepped into that personal identity, but I recognized its importance. And I'm glad that Vanderstelt highlighted that in week 4 of his book. All right, y'all. Well, we're going to get back to the content.
You just said y'all.
All right, y'all. Buckle on your spurs.
What on earth is happening to you, David? We'll see you all next week.
As I wait, heart of God.